Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and hello to you teachers, coaches, players, parents, and everybody who loves our game of tennis. And we're back for another week of American Tennis. And folks, thanks for your patience. We did not have a program last week that came off very well. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but we've got it worked out. And I would like to thank the UR Tennis Network. And, of course, the originator was Jason Haynes. And, Jason, we hope you're doing well out there. But right now, the UR Tennis Network, we'd like to thank Coach J.P. Weber. And I'm hoping he calls in today. He said he might have a little bit of time. A guy is one brilliant man and juggles a lot of balls at the same time. And, wow, just does a heck of a job for kids, heck of a job for coaches. We thank you for the We Coach Tennis Network and We Coach Tennis website. Over 2,000, I think, people on that site now and that Facebook. But thank you, J.P. Weber. And then Lisa Stone, of course, with her Parenting Aces program every Tuesday. John Denise, Coach John Denise, this Florida connection. And he's got the hottest show there. I mean, my golly, the success of Florida high school tennis over the years. And, of course, how many participants in the state of Florida and just great players. But John Denise, we thank you for putting that all together and the work that you do. Folks, join his show 5:30 on Thursdays, and it's really, really a good one. I'm Coach Chuck Creasy. Listen, I would really welcome Chuck at CoachCreasy.com if you ever have ideas that you would like for me to go forward with. This is my fifth year when We Coach Tennis Network, actually, and the UR Tennis Network, but American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy, and we talk about American tennis, but what would you like to talk about? What kind of a program would you like to have? Do you like it when we interview coaches and other people, or do you like the instructional series or the coaching series that we put on And if you have any ideas, go to chuck@coachcreasy.com, K-R-I-E-S-E.com. But what's prompting me to ask you this is recently I had a group of parents asking me about scheduling. Now, if you listen to my program 2 weeks ago, I gave the example, and it was not a really a, what do I want to say? It wasn't a great thing to talk about, maybe, but it was something the parents really need to hear. I use the example of a friend of mine whose wife came down to play at a local 3.0 or L3 or whatever the heck you call those tournaments, and isn't that the worst way to describe tournaments? Tim Wilkerson was on J.P. Weber's show some 8 or 10 months back, and he said, kids don't play for points. They don't play for the same reasons that adults play. Kids play for rivalries and tournaments of heritage. And that stuck with me, and I really believe that. But this was an L3. If somebody said, what was the tournament, and they say L3, that doesn't exactly inspire me to go watch, does it you? So the mother brought her son down and a friend, and of course hotel rooms, 3 nights in the Charleston area, food, entry fees, and aren't entry fees out of control now? Aren't they? We've got to do something about the referee glut of the cost of these referees. And referees, if you're listening out there, you're going to put yourself out of business. It doesn't mean that you're not good at what you do, or if you are, or if you're not, basically you're pricing yourself out of the market. And it's real simple. We're going to discuss this up at Kalamazoo next week with a group of coaches. You're just pricing yourself out of the market, and this is a game of honor. This is a game that we should be following the code. Golf doesn't need all these referees to be standing over every shot that the player makes. So anyhow, with all those expenses, my friend spent about $1,200 for this tournament. $1,200, and the boy got 49 games in 3 matches. And I told the mom, 49 into 1,200, that's about, 49 into 1,200, it's about $24 a game. $24, is that right? Oh my God, that's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable, $24 a game. And my friend put it to this way, he said, no, with no ad scoring between 4 and 7 points, it's between $3 to $6 a point. And that's just too much. We've got to do some things. But I had a group of parents ask me about scheduling, and I'm going to throw in today a few of the fundamentals of scheduling and scheduling for success, I called it. But let me start out the program by saying this is part of our instructional series, our coaching series, but I wanted to make the statement that more players are messed up by wrong scheduling, I think, than any other reason. More than a faulty forehand or backhand or serve or just about anything. Wrong scheduling messes up players. And I wanted to say that it's not something that needs to happen, but there are fundamentals that do need to happen. So I want to talk about scheduling for success and how you go about doing it. First thing I'd like to say is that with all my players, I will get a piece of paper, and I'll sit down and I'll draw like a clock where you have 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and, of course, the 12. And then instead I'll put January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, and on through December. So I make it like a clock. And this is Coach Frank Salazar's method. And Coach Frank was one of my players years ago. And I'm so proud of Frank and happy for him. He had a player that won Wimbledon Juniors in doubles. Way to go, Frank. I wish I had some applauding going on there. But Frank has a Wimbledon or a Grand Slam champion. He's already coached the likes of Francis Tiafoe and Mitchell. Well, he worked with Mitchell Frank a lot. And then Dennis Kudla, Tracy Capra, and many, many top juniors. And good going, Frank. But this was Frank's idea, and I have used it ever since he showed this to me 8 or 9 years ago. So I use a clock, and what you do is if you can look at the face of a clock, and you mark down 3, 4, or 5 critical junctions during the year that you want to your player, your son, your daughter, to play this tournament. It might be the state qualifier. It might be the national clay courts, national hard courts. I'd say for junior tennis, there's probably about 5 times a year that you must do well, you need to do well. You build up to a crescendo at that moment with your best tennis. Now, we have a sport that is not seasonal. It's not like football, basketball, or baseball. It's not a seasonal sport, so it's pretty darn hard to take a break in our sport, and you really, really need to think closely about how you do the scheduling. And I wanted to make this point. Scheduling is done a year at a time. And wherever you do it at the end of the summer, the start of the summer, or Christmas time, or whenever, it's best to do it a year at a time. And when you do it at a year at a time, remember that it is a movable puzzle, but this is your fundamental schedule. This is what you're going with. That youngster is trying to peak at those 5 different times or 4 different times. Now, here's the point. At those 4 or 5 different times, let's say the youngster is trying to peak at Kalamazoo, the national hard courts. It's the granddaddy of all the junior tournaments. And did anybody out there hear a rumor that they're going to try to move Kalamazoo down to Lake Nova? I mean, did anybody hear that? I heard a rumor the other day. I heard that they're going to maybe try to run the NCAAs down there, Kalamazoo. And, oh, if they did this, it would be a disaster. Now, I know they've got to prop up the 100-court complex somehow with events. Oh, my golly. If they do things like that, they will kill tennis in this area. Because of all our local volunteers, all those people have given their blood, sweat, tears, and years. If you guys do that, you better think long and hard, because you might just kill off all of your energy of your volunteers. And statewide, it's happening in this system of junior tournaments with them. The way they put the point system together is just killing off our local volunteers, our tournament directors. I know that if I did a tournament, build it up for 10 years, and then USTA swept in and just sort of took it, I would not want to give my blood, sweat, and tears again to that, the old USTA. That would be awful. But anyhow, I just heard that. But let's say, I got off sidetrack there, folks, but let's say that Kalamazoo is what you're shooting. That's one of your 5 periods. Now, it might be also the Easter Bowl. It might be National Clay Court. It might be your state high school tournament. But here's what you do. So I draw beside the clock, I'll draw a linear line just straight across. And there will be 5 different periods. The first period is the rest period, that you're just coming off of your rest and you're ready to get the training going. Then the training period. The training period could be designated, same as the rest period, whatever the child needs, whatever the player needs. But the training period goes for, a week to 10 days to 2 weeks just to get ready, and plenty of reps at winning, plenty of set play, working on the game. And then the first tournament, I'm going to call this a level 4 checkpoint tournament, level 4, and I'm going to come back and explain the levels. First tournament should be one that your youngsters can win. There is no bad win in tennis. Golly, that's the worst thing possible. Is I'll ask juniors a lot of time, how many of you won tournaments this year? And Very few carry home the championship trophy. Big, big mistake. It could be the Little Sisters of the Poor Open, the CYO Inner City Championship for Catholic churches. It could be the City Parks Tournament. It could be any tournament. Just remember what I'm saying. There is no bad win in tennis. Youngsters have to get used to the repetition of grouping 3 points in a row, of carrying leads, of playing as the favorite. All of them need to do this. It's not magical. Once now and then you'll see a player pop up who's the underdog, but most of the time if you look at tournaments, youngsters need to get comfortable at carrying the responsibility of being the leader. So checkpoint four, that's I'm going to call it a probably a going to win. I'm going to win. You're the favorite. You're the favorite player, and you're supposed to win. And checkpoint four tournament. Then after that, the next tournament should be a checkpoint three tournament. That's a I should win, they could win. This is the nail biter. This is the Bahonka's Quiver tournament. This is the one that youngsters say, I don't want to play that tournament. I'm seated three and I don't want to play. There's a ton of good players that could beat you, but this is much, very much a needed tournament. That's the minimum that a youngster should get be ready before they go to Kalamazoo. And then the Kalamazoo tournament is the big kahuna. That's the tournament where I'm going to call it a one or a two tournament, and I'm going to come back and explain that. Checkpoint one or checkpoint two. That's the big one. Now, if they do great at the Kalamazoo or that big event, then they should sit on their victories, sit on a great event and absorb, digest the success and the confidence. However, if they do poorly, I always have the youngsters beforehand plan to play a number four tournament right after the big one so that then they go to the rest period with confidence. It is very, very important to go to the rest period with confidence. So do you see where I'm coming from? So it's a 4 weeks of tournament. You could do three. I guess if you put together a bunch of practice matches for wins and successes. But folks, the worst thing is to, and I'll tell you, your youngsters, they do not like playing the pressure tournaments. We have a good friend that coached a player to a national championship, ITF championship tournament. Then he had to come back and play in his local L3 or L1 or whatever the heck it was. But it was a regional tournament, and the kid ducked it. He didn't want any part of it. And the coach, we talked, we counseled a lot, but the parents didn't budge, and neither did the kid. And in the end, the kid lost about three or four months. So it's real important these tournaments to schedule properly. Now I've learned a long time ago in other team sports, basketball and even team tennis, that you schedule a third. About a third of your teams that you play, you should walk away as a winner. A third of the times you're going to get smacked. You do for exposure and sort of learn the level, experience. A third of the level should be at your where you are at right now. So it's a third. It's very, very important to do a third. So let's talk about what these checkpoints. So a long time ago, I realized as a coach that if somebody's two levels better than your player, you're not going to win that one. And if your player is two levels better than somebody else, you're probably not going to lose that one no matter how crummy you play. So most of the time these tournaments, the kids are in one level of each other. But within the levels, they're either favorites or underdogs. And that's just the way it is. So the roles as an underdog are what I call checkpoints one and twos. Checkpoints one and twos. And the roles of the favorite are checkpoints three and four. So listen closely as I describe these. Checkpoint one you're the underdog and you're going to lose. Probably you'll play close, but most of the time, 90% of the time, you're going to lose. You might luck up, but most of the time you're going to lose because you're the underdog to another strong favorite. You're really in over your head. You're sort of playing up here. And so that's what that is. Checkpoint two, you're an underdog, good enough to win, and you could win, and you can put you play free, and most of the time our youngsters love doing the checkpoint two tournaments, folks. They love doing the checkpoint two tournaments. They're the hero tournaments where you have nothing to lose and the other person has a lot to lose, and you these are the ones the kids say, oh, I'm really making advances, but they're not the most important. They have their moment, they have their special time, but they are not where it's at. So checkpoint ones are like not going to win, could only win if something happens, but most of the time I play close and lose. Checkpoint two is you're the underdog. You could win, but your opponent should win. Pay attention to that closely. I could win. My opponent should win. Checkpoint three is just the opposite. Now you become favored, and I should win, but the opponent could win. Whoa, now this is where it gets tough. Usually, eating your spinach is not fun. Eating your broccoli is not fun. Taking a castor oil is not fun. Those things that are not fun are usually the things that make you better. Checkpoint three tournaments are the most important tournaments for the rite of passage to higher levels. The checkpoint three tournaments are the rite of passage to higher levels. These are the Bahonkas quiver tournaments. In other words, your rear end is so nervous you're shaking the stadium. Usually your player will come off and say, I played terrible. At first set I was down 5-1. I had to come back. I won 7-6, 6-1. Oh, I played so bad. And your player just absolutely despises to do this until they get used to doing it, and then they start to read the situations. But it's a checkpoint three for your player, and it's a checkpoint two tournament for the other guy. But checkpoint three being the favorite where you should win, the other person could win. Now, checkpoint four is I'm going to win. I'm probably going to win unless something crazy happens, and I'm almost two levels better than the opponent. So understand here, as a checkpoint one tournament, you're almost two levels worse than that favorite guy, and you might get good enough to play close, but you're in the stadium, but you never get the bat type of thing. You might be in the parking lot, but not quite in the stadium. It really is a important thing to sometime get that exposure. But if you only play checkpoint ones, you never get a hold of your confidence. Checkpoint twos, you only play, everybody loves those, but you only play checkpoints ones and twos. You do well when you're on a roll. You do well when things are going smoothly. You do well if your confidence is in check, but these do not help you get where you need to go. So I think you're reading the situation. Let me tell you the story of a player that we worked with, my friend worked with a long time. And what happened was the player was somewhere 150, 170, and he got hot. He qualified for one of the Grand Slams. And he got hot, went all the way through the qualifying tournament, and then he won two rounds in the main draw. So he went all the way from being ranked about 150 in the world to about, golly, I think it was 70-something. Listen, this is very similar to what happened to Shelby Rogers at the French Open. Now, Shelby Rogers is struggling a little bit right now. This is where it's really important for Brian Mitten, her coach, and those who are helping her to schedule very, very wisely to make sure they don't all just go with checkpoint two events, because everybody's looking for the magic. I would say, I don't know the situation, but maybe this is what happened when Melanie Udan got hot a few years ago. And it usually happens the player will get hot, and instead of paying attention to the most fundamental principle I stated early of doing this a year in advance, and it is a movable puzzle, but do not knee-jerk. You have to go back and stay with the formula of playing those checkpoint four tournaments, checkpoint three, and then you can go to the big event, and then make sure that they never go to the rest period without winning. That's very, very important. So anyhow, this player my friend was coaching, he got hot and he moved all the way up to about 70 in the world, 75 in the world. Now, you've got to understand, when you're on the challengers, that's not terribly tough living, but sort of tough living. You've got to get a lot of motels on your own. A lot of them don't have housing. You're traveling around. It's completely different when you get on tour. When you get on tour, you're staying in the five-star hotels. You get transportation. You make money just for showing up and playing in the event. So the next year, because it was so good and he had the free passes now, or he qualified for the bigger tournaments, he went and played only the bigger tournaments. And I think what my friend said, he played 23 tour events. He only won like three matches during that time. Now, during that time, he basically lost confidence, lost the knack of learning what to do with the lead and carrying the lead, and all those things we talk about when we talk about the scoring system. But he dropped out, and he never did make it back to the tour events, only in and out of the tour events. So scheduling there, it was too much of a temptation to go for everything all at once. Isn't there a story about that, about the killing the goose that laid the golden egg? You try to open them up and get all the golden eggs all at once. That's what we do with scheduling, folks. We just try to do it all at once, and our kids get hot, and they win these checkpoint two tournaments for themselves, and we say, wow, they've made a jump. And you know what? They have made a jump. You can only do what you can do. But there's a big, big difference in playing as the underdog, as the hunter, as being the hunted favorite player. That's really, really critical for players to understand this, for coaches to understand it. And listen, it's like pulling teeth. I'll tell you myself, I was working with a top world-ranked junior player. Once that player started doing very, very well, they don't want to go back and do the dirty work. You always have to go back and sweep the floor. It doesn't matter how sweet the meadows are, you still always have to mow the grass. And no matter how much better it looks and how much you want to be there, and the excitement of it all, you still got to take care of your dirty work. Now, if you're team coaching, if you're doing the team coaching, well, remember that it's the third, a third, a third. And I will tell you that one of the great harms that has happened in college tennis is before we used to play Georgia when I was at Clemson, I used to schedule two wins on the front end and then one win on the back end after the Georgia. So we get three out of four, and a lot of times the kids would be riding confidence, and the times we got wins and would go forward, a lot of times it was just proper scheduling and trying to bring their confidence along. But, you know, look, I got to go to commercial. I will be right back with American Tennis. I hope we have our guest call in. This is Coach Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena, from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
And it's Coach Chuck Creasy and Making Them in America. And, folks, I have enjoyed being here today. I've got a few minutes. I want to go back and talk about the scoring system. I'm going to do this over and over and over again. Folks, we're at war here with, and I always call it tennis tyranny when people dictate to you what you have to do. And you know what? That's fine. The leadership priorities, the leadership fundamentals of some people do not understand that to get people to do things, you have to either persuade them or inspire them by your example. The minute that our USTA took on more of a coercive mentality of force feeding us, whether it was red, orange, green balls. And by the way, I use green ball, green dot balls a lot during my camps. I use them with top players for tempo training. And yeah, it's a great tool. I've used punctured balls or I've used dead balls since the late 1980s, early 1990s for overload principles. It has nothing to do with them being a good teaching tool. It has everything to do with tennis tyranny. Has everything to do with forcing the good and noble coach. It has everything to do with forcing our 10 and our 12-year-old kids to dumbing them down and forcing them to do what they do. It's just an abomination. It's the arrogance is beyond belief when you think about them saying, we're smarter than you. This has to work. We're going to do this. This is going to be the savior. What they need to do, what they really should do. It's about ideas, and it's about getting people to buy into your ideas. And then the best idea will win out, and that's how you progress. Have you ever thought that how much progression they are preventing by locking themselves down to the fundamentals they do? Now, so I'm calling the USTA out for you coercive leadership. I'm also calling out the ITA. And the ITA, your coercive leadership is despicable. And that's a tough word, but it's true because I saw the way that they bullied, pushed, can I say lied, their way through this whole ruse of pushing forward NOAAD scoring into the college arena again. And so we have to fight it. We have to fight tennis tyranny. Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God, as Thomas Jefferson said, and this tennis tyranny has been awful. We need to protect our scoring system. It's 141 years old. It is the fundamental that has marked rites of passage for every player in the last 141 years. So the rites of passage now are being changed. They are being changed to where we need an asterisk for abbreviation. We can call it double A tennis scoring. Asterisk abbreviated. So now you don't have to be as good of a player to be the number one player. Very much like dumbing down chess into checkers and saying you were a chess champion when really you were only a checkers champion. It's very much like the dumbing down of schoolwork or dumbing down of anything. What used to be an A in a literature class now is been dumbed down to what a C level used to be. A C level is now an A. This is a tragedy. It's thinking in a socialist way. It's complete dumbing down. The standards and participation trophies are really a formula for disaster in trying to make youngsters winners, into winners. The whole mentality of taking participation success and saying the best in a big pool will surface. As good as that sounds, it never works. Excellence will only come forward when you try to pursue excellence, and kids are cut, and they are put back into the lower group. I've often said you can put all the band members you want out there, but you're never going to have an orchestra. What you need to do is go after the orchestra, and those that don't make it get cut and get put back into the band, and you have both. You have excellence in orchestras and excellence in the band as well. And, folks, so, again, traditional scoring. Go out there and predict traditional scoring. It's the most fair, accurate, time-tested formula for skill sets and the rites of passages that we need. Folks, it's tennis. It's a game of simultaneous offense and defense. Everyone... The critical thing is that you must win 3 points in a row, a conversion. You don't have to do that with no-add scoring. Fitness has been taken out as one of the cornerstones for success in our game. This makes it into an after-school activity instead of a sport. Abbreviating scoring promotes random momentum swing, neutralizes the small differences also that makes a player excellent. I have a slice backhand, you don't. With traditional scoring, I am able to use my small advantage to make a big difference as the match progresses. You have a kick serve, I don't. That small difference, small advantage becomes a big difference as it progresses. Abbreviating scoring promotes randomness. Randomness is not what we want when it comes down for excellence. I got to brag, my daughter just did some really fantastic things. She met some times and things in her sport of swimming, and I'm so, so proud of her. Well, that stopwatch doesn't lie, and that stopwatch is the accurate barometer. When you have abbreviated scoring in one-to-one contests, it is the randomness does not really show where someone is at. We have a boxing match, and we tie one hand behind both people's behind their back. We want to make it more fair, and the lesser boxer wins. That's pretty much what we're doing with tennis, and it will only end in the demise of our sport. And the dumbing down of our sport is an abomination. Point construction is highlighted by traditional scoring. Ball striking is highlighted by no-add scoring. The drama, people say, oh, no-add is exciting. Well, no, it's about drama. You watching baseball this season, folks? Are you watching baseball? In baseball, we have tremendous drama, especially later innings with the duels between the pitchers and the batters. Could you imagine in baseball if we got to the third strike and a foul ball was an out, was strike three? That's what we're doing with no-add. We're limiting the drama, and therefore, I want you to remember this when people... Excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each denial. Drama leads to fantastic excitement. Excitement will never lead to drama. You know, it's over. You know, it's the more you have excitement, the less exciting things become. Just throw a birthday party 8 days in a row and see who shows up for the third one. That's what we're doing with this no-add scoring. So the drama is important. Players and coaches overwhelmingly, ITA, wanted traditional scoring. What have you done going against the players and the coaching? And how can you hold your head up and basically just tell an untruth about how this was promoted? This was promoted by a certain group of coaches who wanted randomness so that they could have success now and then. They basically too lazy to do the work and didn't want to work hard enough for it. And it's awful. No ad is not a rule of tennis. It's not a rule of tennis. Never was. Jimmy Allen, I guess, knew something about tennis, but my golly, he just invented this, and people, and I was there when it was pushed through. It was pushed through for random results so that coaches could make an exponential or a geometric jump in the level of their team without going through the things you have to. It allowed pecking orders to be upset quickly without skill sets. It's not a rule of tennis. It should not be ever used. We honor the game if we play traditional tennis, folks. Step up, honor the game. Step up, say what needs to be said. Don't be a sheep, one of the sheeple out there, and just fall in line. If you're older like me, sometimes you just don't care enough. You just say, hey, what's the deal? My dog is not in this race anymore. If you're a young coach, you're just trying to fit in. But listen, if you're a young coach, stand up. You know something's wrong. You know something is not working properly when you watch this no ad, and this college format is an abomination. Stand up, speak out. Don't let some of those guys bully you down. And then you coaches have been in 10 to 15 to 20 years, you're trying to hang on to your pensions. You don't want to make waves. Look, we always say address issues, not people. Nobody can say anything. This is still, for time being, I don't know what's going to happen if we get many more liberal mentalities, this progressive movement. I don't know if it's going to be freedom of speech anymore. But, folks, we have freedom of speech. Address issues, not people. And daggone it, we can do a lot of things. But I have enjoyed talking to you today and with our instructional series on scheduling. Pass on about the American Tennis Program to your friends. Email me at chuck@coachcreasy.com.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Semper Fi tattooed on his lip song. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prisoner. He's just made in America.
Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. And folks, grab somebody out there and help that youngster in front of you learn the greatest game in the world, still the greatest game in the world. See you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.